A message from Nagme Abedini, Pastor Saeed's wife. The nightmare of a husband and a father imprisoned in Iran. Today marks 1 month since his conviction on January 27th. We'll be talking about it today on Jay Sekulow Live.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
In September 2012, American pastor Saeed Abedini was arrested while building orphanages in Iran. He has been sentenced to 8 years in one of Iran's toughest prisons. To let
it go. A new letter we have released from Pastor Saeed, dated February 18th. We had it translated to make sure everything was accurate as we give you exactly what he wrote.
My dear friends, the conditions here get so very difficult that my eyes get blurry. My body does not have the strength to walk, and my steps become very weak and shaky. And after all of these pressures, after all of the nails they have pressed against my hands and feet, they are only waiting for one thing, for me to deny Christ, but they will never get this from me.
Saeed, this is Bart from Mercy Me, and we are praying with everything that we have that you are home free and soon.
Hey, Pastor Saeed, I'm Michael W. Smith. Just know that we got your back in America. We are praying for you and for a quick release. Stay strong.
Pastor Saeed, Stephen Curtis Chapman here. We are more than conquerors through Christ who loves us. Bless you, brother. Thank you for what you're doing. I look forward to meeting you face to face, shaking your hand, hugging you, and doing work together.
I now know that I have not been forgotten and that we are together in this path. God gives me grace. This is my message for the church. Stay strong for his glory. He will come back soon. Be with God and give your best efforts for his kingdom. Pastor Saeed, servant of Jesus Christ in chains for endurance of the gospel. I love you all.
And now, your host, Jordan Sekulow.
Jay Sekulow Live. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. It's been exactly 1 month to the day since Pastor Saeed was sentenced, convicted, his crime, the establishment of house churches becoming a national security threat to the Iranian regime. A national security threat because of his work with the Christian church from 2001 to 2005. And an intent, again, to disrupt and to cause damage to and threaten the Iranian government because of that work, sentenced to 8 years in one of those brutal prisons in the world. We've got a guest joining us today, Marina Namat. She spent 26 months, got arrested when she was 16 years old in Iran, at Evin prison, and we'll be talking about what it's like every day. And she starts off by saying, you know, the first day, they bring you in and they torture you. They beat your feet. They make you feel like you don't exist. This is a very tough conversation we're going to be having today with Marina Namat. She's also an author of a book about that experience, which we'll be talking about as well. You don't want to miss that. That's the second half hour today of Jay Sekulow Live. Folks, Nagme Abedini, Saeed's wife, has written a new note to all of you about what this experience has been like now marking this first month. Now, and she writes the note, which is just posted to ACLJ.org. This is from Nagme. We'll be on Fox News, by the way, tomorrow morning, so you can catch us then at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time. She writes, it's been 9 months since Saeed kissed the little foreheads of our children as he said his goodbyes early in the morning of June 22nd, 2012. 9 months since Daddy sung to them and tucked them into bed, and 9 months since I embraced my husband as we said our goodbyes, thinking at the time we would be separated only a few weeks as he returned to Iran to continue work on building an orphanage. Maybe if I knew what was to unfold, I would have held him a little longer, talked a little longer. It's been 5 months since the frantic phone call that woke me up in the middle of the night, telling me of the horrific way my husband was taken. Five Revolutionary Guards raiding the house and taking him, not knowing where he was or what had happened to him. 5 long months. Maybe that's why still to this day I wake up frantic in the middle of the night. Folks, I'll continue to read that letter. We get back from the break. If you want to talk to us on air, 1-800-684-3110. Over 10,000 joined our petition to save Saeed, bringing us over 355,000 yesterday. Folks, will you pick up the phone? 1 month this mark since he was convicted and sentenced to 8 years in jail because of his Christian faith. 877-989-2255. Call that number, 877-989-2255.
The situation for American pastor Saeed Abedini is getting worse. This U.S. citizen is being beaten, tortured, and subjected to psychological abuse as he serves 8 years in one of Iran's most brutal and deadly prisons. Pastor Saeed is facing a life-threatening prison sentence simply because of his Christian faith. He's no longer permitted to call his wife and two young children who live in the U.S. His family does not know when or even if they will ever hear his voice again. The ACLJ continues to work here at home and around the world to secure his freedom. We continue to pressure the U.S. government, the United Nations, and the European Union. But we need to hear from you. There's power in numbers, and that's why your voice is so important. Sign on to our petition now to save Pastor Saeed. Time is critical. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to know that the American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
We are very grateful. I want to say this, a huge thank you to our friends and members from literally from coast to coast. Because of the generosity of our members, we've added new lawyers. We're handling international affairs as high as even the United Nations. A lot of issues going on, a lot of great things happening, and a huge thank you to our friends and members around the country.
With an exceptional track record of success, the American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. There's no better place to get the facts, the truth, about the issues that matter most to you and your family than at the ACLJ website. Learn more about our work and our defense of freedom online at aclj.org.
Welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. This is Jordan Sekulow. A new note released from Nagmeh Abedini will be on Fox News tomorrow. And I want to let you know, my dad should be back in the studio tomorrow. This may be your final opportunity to pick up your phone. Now, today marks 1 month since Saeed Abedini, an American citizen, a pastor, a father of a six-year-old daughter and a four-year-old son who are here in the United States, and his wife here in the United States, a U.S. citizen, and 1 month ago today, he was sentenced to 8 years in Evin prison in Iran because of his Christian faith. Only because of his Christian faith. An attempt to intentionally endanger the Iranian regime because of his Christian faith, folks. Because of his Christian faith. 1 month to the day, his wife, Nagmeh Abedini, has written a note. I'm going to read that in just a moment. It's up at aclj.org. This is something you should share with your friends, share with your family. Whether it's online, Facebook, Twitter, email, this is important. And this is directly from her. She wrote this, and it's a tough message to get through. And I know when I'm reading it, it's not going to have the same impact as if you were hearing her say it or her read it. And we're going to be putting that together for you, too, as well, so you can hear her voice. But I didn't want to waste any time. Today marks 1 month since he was sentenced to 8 years. Can't make a phone call. Hasn't heard his wife's voice. Hasn't heard his children's voice, and they're now asking questions about their dad since early January. And now, again, folks, he looks forward to what he's looking forward at is 8 years of constant torture and abuse. And we've got a guest on the program today, Marina Namat, who knows exactly what that means. What did they do to her? Take a listen to this, folks. What did they do to Marina, 16 years old, when she was arrested and put in Evin prison? The moment, her first day, her first interrogation. Take a listen. She'll be joining us the next segment, next half hour, Bite One.
They lashed the soles of my feet with a length of cable. It is the favorite method of torture in the Middle East. I have spoken, you know, I was in Evin prison with hundreds of other people, and I have spoken with many Evin inmates later. And it's very rare, extremely rare, that somebody goes to Evin and is not beaten up like that.
And we know, we've heard from Pastor Saeed about those beatings. Folks, she was 16, and that's what they did to her. Now, imagine being an American and a convert, a Christian. And again, folks, knowing that this is the next 8 years of your life, call now. Add your name to this petition. I'm not sure the phone lines tomorrow are going to be used for that purpose. So, folks, you want to pick up the phone today. It marks 1 month since he was sentenced. A great day to join if you have not done so. It's an absolutely free number to call, 877 877-989-2255. That's 877-989-2255. Do it for Pastor Saeed. Do it for Nagme. Do it for his children, his six-year-old daughter, and his four-year-old son. Let me read more from this note that we have just posted to ACLJ.org. I'll start from the beginning in case you're just joining us. It's been 9 months since Saeed kissed the little foreheads of our children as he said his goodbyes early in the morning of June 22nd, 2012. 9 months since Daddy sung to them and tucked them into bed, and 9 months since I embraced my husband as we said our goodbyes, thinking at the time we would be separated only a few weeks as he returned to Iran to continue to work on building an orphanage. Maybe if I knew what was to unfold, I would have held him a little longer and talked to him a little longer. It's been 5 months since the frantic phone call that woke me up in the middle of the night, telling me of the horrific way my husband was taken. Five Revolutionary Guards raiding the house and taking him, not knowing where he was or what had happened to him. 5 long months. Maybe that is why still to this day, and this is from Nagme, folks, I suddenly wake up frantic in the middle of the night. I turn over only to find Saeed's empty spot, only to find that the nightmare is not over yet, only to discover that this nightmare may not be over anytime soon. It has been 1 month to the day since Saeed was given his 8-year sentence because of his Christian faith. I know deep in my heart that unless we speak out and fight for him, Saeed might not survive the 8 years in that horrific prison, especially because when the Iranian government is doing all it can to silence him. Folks, again, this is coming directly from Nagme Abedini. The note continues, how many more nights am I to hold my weeping children as they ask me to tell them stories of how Daddy used to hold them when they were born, how he used to play with them, kiss them, and hold them each night before he tucked them into bed? How many more times must I hold back my tears as I sing the worship songs he used to sing to them, as they beg me to sing like Daddy did because they are trying desperately to hold on to the memories of their dad? Over the last month, I have pondered over and over how I will ever explain to my children that Daddy has been given 8 years in a horrific prison, and we don't even know if he will survive. 1 month, 31 days, 744 hours, 44,640 minutes, 2,678,400 seconds. During this nightmare, I lean on the promise in Scripture that we are hard-pressed on every side, yet not crushed. We are perplexed, but not in despair, persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed. That's in 2 Corinthians. Ultimately, God is in control, and he controls governments and situations for his glory. There is nothing Saeed and I desire more than to die to ourselves and allow Christ to shine through to this dying world, that he would be glorified in all of this, and many would come to know the saving grace of Jesus. Our trust is in the Lord, and he is carrying us through this nightmare and drawing us closer to him. But I also believe that the Lord is using our prayers and the political, social media, and other efforts to bring us together as the body of Christ. He promises to turn all of this for his glory. Final paragraph from Nagme Abedini. This is all from Saeed's wife, posted today in a reflection on the 1 month exactly since he was imprisoned. This nightmare and the plea for my husband's life should cross religious and political barriers. It should grip all human beings at our heart's core, motivating us to do what is right, to stand up for someone whose human rights are being violated. While Saeed doesn't have a voice to sing to his children, we each have a voice for his freedom. We can make a difference. Nagme Abedini, the wife of imprisoned American pastor Saeed Abedini, a U.S. citizen. She's in Idaho with her two children. Folks, you can send that letter around to your friends and family. It's a note to all of you. It's on ACLJ.org. But this is a day to call and join our petition. This is a day you need to speak out. If you haven't done so, folks, if you have friends and family that haven't, I'm not sure that our phone line tomorrow, my dad returns the broadcast, is going to be used for the petition. You can always sign at ACLJ.org or SaveSaeed.org. Now, we're over 355,000. We're on the way to 500,000. We need to get there before March 5th. I think we can if we hear from all of you. Nagme's asking you to be his voice. Will you be his voice? She's pouring it out, folks, about what this is really like. You may see her on TV. You may hear her on the broadcast. She's tough. She's strong. She finds strength in those moments. Those moments in the letter, that's real life. Trying to explain this to your kids. Trying to deal with it personally. Waking up in the middle of the night, constantly that terrorizing nightmare of what it was like the day you heard he was taken to Evin prison from his parents' home when he was under house arrest in September. Will you call now, folks? Our toll-free number, adding your name to this petition, 877 877- 877-989-2255. That's 877-989-2255. You can also go to aclj.org and sign this petition online. Over 10,000 people have done so. But I hope after reading through that whole letter, and I know you have to imagine my voice, and it's not makes words, and you can read it online. I think it's very powerful to read this one. It's at aclj.org. Share it with your friends and family. We've heard from Saeed. Now, what's it like? Why is this not just his torture, but her torture as well? This letter explains just that. Call now, 877-989-2255. Today marks 1 month since he was convicted of being a national security threat, and 1 month since he was sentenced to 8 years in a brutal prison where he's tortured psychologically and physically. Call 877-989-2255. You can also sign up at aclj.org. David French, senior counsel with the ACLJ, is joining me today. And David, it takes some time to get through that letter, but it is very powerful. And you've also talked about the number of people who have been signing on to the petition, adding their name. And I think this is another reason why. It's another opportunity for those who have already signed. This is a tool they can use. And it's why Nagme went through this difficult exercise to bring more people to raise their voice for Saeed.
Oh, that's right. And we were just talking in the break how from this point yesterday, we were at a little less than 345,000. And now we're over 355,000 just online alone with more people who made phone calls. This has started out as a petition. It's become a movement. It's really astonishing to see what's happened across the political spectrum, across the music industry, across the United States, as people have shared this petition. And you know, rarely do we ever see anything bipartisan anymore in Washington. But when 84 senators and congressmen weigh in on a bipartisan basis on behalf of an American pastor, we know we've crossed into a new realm here. It's astonishing to see.
She writes about the terror at night, the nightmares, folks. Nagme Amedini, about what it's like 1 month after her husband has been convicted and sentenced to 8 years in prison. Will you join us, folks? Will you add your name to this petition now? Call 877-989-2255. That's 877-989-2255. Again, let me encourage you to call now. 1 month. Today marks the day. Should mark the day you pick up the phone if you haven't done so already. 1-877-989-2255. It's 877-989-2255. Make sure you're not left behind on this one, folks, that you didn't add your name to this petition when you were given the opportunity, when you had the moment to call. 877-989-2255. We'll be right back.
The release of Pastor Youssef Nardakhani would not have happened without the tremendous coverage from the Christian media and from global news networks like Fox News. Media coverage kept the spotlight on Pastor Youssef, and while the ACLJ is grateful to the millions of people who stood with us in the fight to free Pastor Youssef, the ACLJ is also grateful for the news organizations that kept the focus on this story, including Fox News anchor Megyn Kelly, who interviewed ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow about the victory.
I want to thank you and Fox News for covering this because it gave it a global interest.
The American Center for Law and Justice is specifically dedicated to the ideal that religious freedom and freedom of speech are inalienable, God-given rights. And you stood up for those principles successfully here. Jay, good for you.
With Pastor Youssef now free, the ACLJ continues its work, now focusing on the persecution of other Christians whose rights, whose freedoms are being threatened. Learn more about the work of the ACLJ online, aclj.org. The situation for American pastor Saeed Abedini is getting worse. This U.S. citizen is being beaten, tortured, and subjected to psychological abuse as he serves 8 years in one of Iran's most brutal and deadly prisons. Pastor Saeed is facing a life-threatening prison sentence simply because of his Christian faith. He's no longer permitted to call his wife and two young children who live in the U.S. His family does not know when or even if they will ever hear his voice again. The ACLJ continues to work here at home and around the world to secure his freedom. We continue to pressure the U.S. government, the United Nations, and the European Union. But we need to hear from you. There's power in numbers, and that's why your voice is so important. Sign on to our petition now to save Pastor Saeed. Time is critical. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. 989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.
Jay Sekulow Live. We are taking your phone calls, 1-800-684-3110. A special guest joining us in the next segment of the broadcast, next half hour, Marina Namat. She spent 2 years and 2 months. At 16 years old, she was arrested. She's a Christian, but she was arrested because of political work. She's not a convert. Her family actually fled Soviet Russia, ended up in Iran, and, of course, the revolution happens while they're there, and she's growing up. 16 years old, thrown in there for 2 years. Her story is tough. You know, the way she describes it, the way she's able to talk about it, and you're actually listening there, it's tough to hear. It's tough to understand what it's like. And you imagine what it must be like for Saeed. She talks about that. What do they do to you at Evin prison? Now, today marks 1 month. 1 month since he was convicted of being a security threat to Iran because of his work with house churches in 2001. And 1 month since he was sentenced to 8 years. We've got a new note from Naghmi Abedini up online, aclj.org, marking today this 1 month since the sentencing. But take a listen from Marina Namat, who spent 2 years and 2 months in the same prison Pastor Saeed's in right now, Evin prison. What do they do to you? Bite two.
So they beat you and beat you and beat you. And it's very difficult to describe that pain. Basically, I call it distilled pain. It's a place in which you're reduced to something you don't even understand what it is. You forget your name. You forget who you are. You forget how to count. They just scream at you.
And why do they do this kind of torture, folks? What's the purpose? You know, she was 16 years old. She had no secret information, nothing that was going to help the national security of the authoritarian regime there post-revolution. Why do they do this to people? Bite three.
Torture, I believe, is not designed to get information. It's designed to break the human soul. They wanted to break us. They wanted to humiliate us. They wanted to take away our human dignity and to reduce us to a place, to a point in our being that we couldn't think on our own. We couldn't function. We couldn't, in a way, mentally and emotionally, we couldn't even exist.
You know, folks, this is from Marina Namat. She'll be joining us. Her books, two of them, Prisoner of Tehran, a memoir about that experience, and then After Tehran, How to Life Reclaimed. She'll be joining us. It's marinanamat.com in the second half hour of the broadcast. Folks, they beat you and beat you. Difficult to describe the pain. And then we hear from Naghmi today in her letter. The nightmares, the terror, trying to figure out how to describe this to your kids. I mean, understand that. Understand the difficulty there. How many nights, she writes, how many more nights am I to hold my weeping children as they ask me to tell them stories of how Daddy used to hold them when they were born, how he used to play with them and kiss them and hold them each night he tucked them into bed? How many more times must I hold back my tears as I sing the worship songs he used to sing to them as they beg me to sing like Daddy did because they are trying desperately to hold on to the memories of their Daddy? They are 6 years old and 4 years old, respectively, folks. Over the last month, I pondered over and over how I will ever explain to my children that Daddy has been given 8 years in a horrific prison, and we don't even know if he'll survive. 1 month, 31 days, 744 hours, 44,640 minutes, 2,678,400 seconds. She's been pondering that. How will I explain this to my children? And then, of course, during the nightmare, she talks about leaning on her faith, that God is ultimately in control, but that we are the voice. And she closes with this: while Saeed doesn't have a voice to sing to his children, we each have a voice for his freedom. We can make a difference. You can share that letter online at aclj.org, but I encourage you now to call 877-989-2255. That's 877-989-2255. Today is a day you need to add your name to this petition. We're over 355,000. I know we can get to 360,000 if you call now. 877-989-2255. We're going to take some phone calls right now. Deb's been holding on the line from Oregon. Deb, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Thank you, Jay.
Thank you very much, Jordan. I just want to thank everyone who's working toward his release, and thank you for reading those letters. I wanted to ask about the four Libyans that have been arrested for producing Sunday school-type materials for children in their language, and I'm hoping that you're going to be trying to do something to obtain their release.
I think, Deb, are you talking about the four... they weren't citizens. Now, one is a Swedish-American, for instance, and another one, I think, is South African. There's a Korean and an Egyptian involved who were in Libya doing that, who were arrested. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yes, I am, yes.
Okay. Yeah, we've been following that one very closely since last week when the news broke. I've done some interviews about it, and we are following up on it. That's as much as I could say right now, Deb, but as you know, if people are seeking our help, we're there to provide it. And sometimes people try different ways. You know, at first you hear about the Swedish American and you wonder, did they go to Sweden? Did they go to the American representatives? And David, and I say that, Deb, because they may be relying on what is closer to their background. And so I will, of course, when we can say anything, we will. But know we're following up on it, that we're following it closely, and that if people come to us, we help. But that doesn't always mean that our initial advice and strategy is to go public with what we're doing or go public about it at all. Now, this one, of course, made the news. But, David, here's an example where, unlike Iran, Libya is a place where the U.S. should have direct influence.
Oh, we should have incredible influence in Libya. Let's not forget, it was American cruise missiles and American fighter jets and support planes and even special forces, perhaps, that helped put this regime in power. I mean, this should be virtually a client state of the United States of America. Not one of those people in power would be in power if it weren't for us. And to the idea that they would arrest someone for quote-unquote proselytizing is astonishing. Why are we continuing to provide aid to those who deny religious liberty? This should be a phone call from the State Department to Libya to release these people, and that should be all it would take. But we'll see what happens.
Folks, today we have released this letter from Nag Mae to you, a way for her to put it into words differently than when she's on with us in interviews, which will be on Fox News tomorrow, doing another one of those interviews. But today marks 1 month since he was imprisoned, since he was sentenced and convicted. He was already imprisoned in September, but this was when it became long-term, eight-year sentence, convicted of intentionally attempting to undermine the national security of Iran because of his work with house churches from 2001 to 2005. That is the actual crime. 8 years in prison, 8 years being tortured. She writes about what it's been like at home, what it's been like with her children. Not easy to write this to you. And folks, we've put it up for you today so you can share it with your friends and family. It's at aclj.org. But today, on this 1 month since his imprisonment, 1 month, I mean 1 month since he was convicted, 1 month since he was sentenced, will you join with us? Will you add your name to this petition? Over 355,000 people have done so. We can get to 500,000 by March 5th, but we need you to join today. Call our toll-free number. It's absolutely free. Petition to Save Saeed, 877-989-2255. You have to speak out. Why? Listen to this quickly. Bite for Marina Namat, who's about to join us in the next half hour.
I always say at conferences that silence is a weapon of mass destruction. Basically, when you're silent in face of injustice and horrible crimes against humanity, in this case, mass torture, mass arrests, mass executions, you know, you name it, when you remain silent, when you know about it and you remain silent, you're a bystander. And to be a bystander in a situation like that is unforgivable.
Unforgivable, folks, to be a bystander. Call 877-989-2255.
The ACLJ continues to work here at home and around the world to secure his freedom. We continue to pressure the U.S. government, the United Nations, and the European Union. But we need to hear from you. There's power in numbers, and that's why your voice is so important. Sign on to our petition now to save Pastor Saeed. Time is critical. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.
Live. Marina DeMott will be joining us in just a few minutes on the broadcast as we talk about her experience. Arrested at 16, spent 2 years and 2 months in Evin prison, same prison Pastor Saeed is in right now, where he has been sentenced to 8 years. She's written a book about it, Prisoner of Tehran, a memoir, and a new book basically about, you know, moving on, how to move on with life after Tehran, A Life Reclaimed. But she talks about this. She talks about it publicly. She talks about it openly. And she'll be joining us. Her website is marinanemat.com. It's MarinaNemat.com. And I will make sure we post this interview online as well. I think it's important that you can have an opportunity to share this interview with your friends and family. We'll make sure to put the link to her website. So if you want to get a copy of her book, which I've got and have read, it's very important when you're thinking about and understanding these cases to go to the people who have lived through it and the experience. And, you know, her key has been, if you people want to get out of this situation, you got to speak up. You got to raise your voice. Dave from California on line two has been holding on. Dave, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Yes. I contend that Pastor Saeed has actually been kidnapped, in which case, according to Mustafa Abu Sway, kidnapping is assault on another. It's considered an act of war. And if kidnapping does take place during actual fighting, kidnapped has to be considered a prisoner of war and treated humanely. So why are they doing all these things to Pastor Saeed against the Quran and against Sharia law?
Well, I mean, first, Dave, let me say this. They treat him as an Iranian. They will not recognize the fact that he is a U.S. citizen. That means the Swiss embassy, which if you saw Argo, which was involved in this earlier on, they are not able to visit Saeed. They have requested, but they're not able to visit Saeed because they don't recognize in Iran his U.S. citizenship. They recognize him only as an Iranian, that he has no rights outside of that, which means that's why he's being treated this way. And so no medical exams, no diplomatic visits at all. And David, we can think about it whatever we want, but the truth is we got to deal with the facts as we have them. We got to deal with Iran and their legal system, if you want to even call it that, the way it is. And what we know is that it's not a normal legal system, and that what you have to do is pressure. And you have to do that through the media and through people signing petitions and through speaking out and through getting the world's attention.
Well, that's right. And there's two things really relevant to this question. Number one, you talk about an act of war. Iran has been in a state of low-intensity warfare against the United States since the Islamic Revolution in 1979. The number of actual overt acts of war against the United States, it's astonishing when you begin to break it down year by year. And number two, referencing Sharia law, there are many different variants and strains of Sharia law, and rest assured that the Islamic Republic of Iran has adopted one of the most jihadist influence strains of Sharia, under which the amount of persecution that Christians must endure under that form of Sharia law is extreme.
You know, folks, again, I think, you know, Dave, I understand you want to say, oh, it's this or it's that. We're all looking for ways to get this pastor home. And know at the ACLJ and through our European Center for Law and Justice and our offices around the world, from the Brazilian Center for Law and Justice and through Europe, Eastern Europe, and in the Middle East, we are working day and night to get Pastor Saeed home. But we have to deal with the reality of the situation that is before us. The situation before us is the facts as we've given them to you. You've got now this new note from Nagme today. Lewis and Kim, I am not able to get to your phone calls before Marina Namat joins us, but I will answer your questions. You're both asking the same thing about the president's involvement. Jay Carney was the first administration official. That's the press secretary for the White House. So, of course, a close advisor to the president. Was the first person to mention this and to make comments about it, directly calling for the release of Pastor Saeed. So I do believe the president knows about this. Also, Senator Lindsey Graham from South Carolina wrote a public note to the president, a letter saying, you need to do more. This needs to be public, and it needs to be personal involvement by you, Mr. President. So if a U.S. senator, one of 100, does that, yes, it's on the president's radar. And, folks, you can get involved. Call 877-989-2255. Be Saeed's voice.
The situation for American pastor Saeed Abedini is getting worse. This U.S. citizen is being beaten, tortured, and subjected to psychological abuse as he serves 8 years in one of Iran's most brutal and deadly prisons. Pastor Saeed is facing a life-threatening prison sentence simply because of his Christian faith. He's no longer permitted to call his wife and two young children who live in the U.S. His family does not know when or even if they will ever hear his voice again. The ACLJ continues to work here at home and around the world to secure his freedom. We continue to pressure the U.S. government, the United Nations, and the European Union. But we need to hear from you. There's power in numbers, and that's why your voice is so important. Sign on to our petition now to save Pastor Saeed. Time is critical. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to know that the American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekula.
We are very grateful. I want to say this, a huge thank you to our friends and members from literally from coast to coast. Because of the generosity of our members, we've added new lawyers. We're handling international affairs as high as even the United Nations. A lot of issues going on, a lot of great things happening, and a huge thank you to our friends and members around the country.
With an exceptional track record of success, the American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. There's no better place to get the facts, the truth, about the issues that matter most to you and your family than at the ACLJ website. Learn more about our work and our defense of freedom online at aclj.org.
Welcome back to the broadcast, folks. This is Jordan Sekulow. We have been talking a lot about Pastor Saeed Abedini. We represent the family here in the United States at the American Center for Law and Justice. Our European Center for Law and Justice is at the UN Human Rights Council as we speak now, preparing for the session there. March 5th and March 11th, two dates to mark on your calendar. As part of telling Saeed Abedini's story, what it's like for him. He's been in prison since September, was put under house arrest in July. We've also wanted to bring you the stories of those who have been in the similar or same situation as Pastor Saeed. One of those individuals, we've played some of her interviews and speeches on the radio broadcast already before. I talked about her books. Marina Namat, who was born in Tehran in 1965, spent 2 years in Evin prison, was on Fox News talking about her story and her situation and what happened. And we knew we wanted to have her on. She's written two books, the latest, which is After Tehran, A Life Reclaimed. Another one, Prisoner of Tehran, a memoir, which I've read. And it's great to have Marina Namat on with us now. Marina, thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Jordan.
First question for you, for people who may not be as familiar with your story, though I know because of what's happened with Saeed and your appearances on some of the media here in the U.S., that the people have been following it. Tell people why at age 16 you were arrested in Iran.
When I was arrested, this was basically about a year after the hostage taking of the Americans in Iran. And many people don't know at all that just months after the hostage taking, thousands of young Iranians, the majority of them teenagers, so 90%, 90, under the age of 20, between the ages of 14 and 20, were arrested. Why? Because we had demonstrated against the Islamic Republic. Because when the Islamic Republic came into power in 1979, before the revolution, it had promised us freedom, justice, democracy, that sort of thing. Khomeini had made all those false promises, and very soon after the revolution, we quickly discovered that all of those had been lies. Dancing became illegal, singing became illegal, having fun became illegal. So when you're 14 years old and having fun becomes illegal, you react to it. So we reacted, and we were on the streets of Tehran protesting in various ways, but unfortunately, all foreign media by then had been expelled from Iran. Nobody had iPhones back there, and there was no Facebook. So these protests were not reported, and so the Iranian government began to arrest young people as early as spring of 1981. I was arrested in 1982, and I was just one of those kids who had been very outspoken.
We're talking to Marina Namat again, folks, who spent 2 years, and let's talk about that. It's Inhambane Prison, same prison Saeed Abedini's in. And Maria, for people out there, this is the prison for those who have been deemed security, national security threats, or enemies of the Islamic Republic.
That's correct.
And you spent 2 years there. When you were arrested, what happened? Was there a case? Was there a trial? Was there, you know, did it start that way? Was there at any point you thought, okay, maybe, you know, I'm going to get out of here? Did the abuse begin immediately? I mean, how long did that take to start? Just so people understand, because we start thinking about prison, we can think about it in our own mind, in our own, you know, U.S. or Western experience, and this is not the same thing.
No, not at all. You must completely exit your frame of mind that has with the justice system in democratic free countries around the world. In Iran, it's entirely different. And these were the early days after the revolution when I was in prison. So everything was extremely chaotic. Now it's not any better, but it has become much more systematic. Back then, everything was completely arbitrary. So they would just come and arrest people and take them. There was really no case. Basically, somebody could have told on you in school. A neighbor could have told on you. A shopkeeper could have told on you. Anybody could have told on you. And they would come and collect you at home. So they would take you upon arrival at Evin Prison. And it is still exactly the same 30 years later. I have spoken with people who have been in Evin recently. And they blindfold you upon arrival. They blindfolded me upon arrival. And I was taken in. I was made to sit down on the floor in a hallway, which is what happens today as well. They make you wait for a long time. In my case, there were just so many people sitting in the hallway waiting that you had to wait for a long time for interrogation. And it's also an intimidation technique. Like, even if there aren't so many people ahead of you, they still make you wait to make you nervous. And then they took me for interrogation. I couldn't see the man who was speaking to me because I was blindfolded. He asked me basic questions, basic personal information, and then he asked me if I had attended protest rallies. And I said yes, because back then attending protest rallies was something everybody did. All of my friends attended protest rallies. He asked me if I had written anything against the government, and yes, I had. I had written articles in my school newspaper. So then they began questioning me in more detail, and they didn't like the answers that I gave them. So they took me to another room, and they took off my blindfold. I was in a small room with two men, Ali and Hamid, and they handcuffed me, and they realized that the handcuffs, they were not adjustable. They were made for adults. I was 16, a tiny girl. And they saw that, and they laughed, and they put both of my wrists together, and they put the two wrists in one cuff, and as it clicked, I heard my right wrist crack, and the torture had not even begun. I started screaming my head off. I just wanted to go home to my mom. I just wanted to go sleep in my own bed. I couldn't understand why these people were doing this to me. And they tied me to the bare wooden bed. I was lying down on my stomach, and they lashed the soles of my feet with a length of cable. It is the favorite method of torture in the Middle East. I have spoken, you know, I was in Evin prison with hundreds of other people, and I have spoken with many Evin inmates later. And it's very rare, extremely rare, that somebody goes to Evin and is not beaten up like that. So they beat you and beat you and beat you, and it's very difficult to describe that pain. Basically, I call it distilled pain. It's a place in which you're reduced to something you don't even understand what it is. You forget your name. You forget who you are. You forget how to count. They just scream at you. And then they give you documents, and they tell you to sign it. And you're so distraught. You're so messed up. And you don't even read them. You just sign them. And there is no lawyer. There is no jury. There was no trial, at least for the first few months. And then, well, they told me I had a trial, but then they also told me I wasn't there when it took place. So, and they told me I had a death sentence. And it was just so strange. But when you are in that place, you realize that this is really happening. This is reality. And it kind of just sucks you in.
And this was, you were 16 years old. You had, this experience had gone between being 16 and 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And because you went to a protest with a number of your friends, and at the time, as you said, that's what everyone was doing.
Yes.
Did you forget who, I think you did talk about this in one of the interviews you did, kind of almost forgetting who you are, and that's what the goal is. It's not that you knew some secret information they were going to get some info out of you by treating you this way.
No, it wasn't about that, really. I figured it out during my interrogation and during the torture that they kept on yelling at me, tell us this, tell us that, but they kept on moving on from that, and they wouldn't even pause to let me catch my breath and maybe answer or even try to come up with some lie or, you know, with something to satisfy them. They never gave me that opportunity for a very long time. And I realized later on that they had all the names that they wanted, all the young people who were deemed as anti-revolutionary from my school, from my high school, our principal, our newly appointed principal, who was a member of the Revolutionary Guard. She had been appointed to basically spy on everybody, and she had already given the prison authorities all of the names, all of the addresses, all of the information. So, and I wasn't even connected, really, to any political groups. I was just an outspoken kid, and so were most of my friends. So the information, the only information we actually had was the information we had on each other and who lived where. But they already had all of that information, so it wasn't about that. It was about torture, I believe, is not designed to get information. It's designed to break the human soul. They wanted to break us. They wanted to humiliate us. They wanted to take away our human dignity and to reduce us to a place, to a point in our being that we couldn't think on our own. We couldn't function. We couldn't, in a way, mentally and emotionally, we couldn't even exist.
Hey, everyone, you've been listening to part one of Jordan's interview with Marina Namat. This is a woman who spent time in Evin prison where Pastor Saeed is now. She started serving time, as you heard from her, when she was 16 years old, spent 2 years there. You hear her talking about just the excruciating torture, the brutal treatment from the guards there at Evin prison, and it really gives us a glimpse into what Pastor Saeed is facing now. It's tough to listen to, folks, but it's important because this is real. We're going to play for you part two of this interview coming back after the break, but we wanted to give you an opportunity. After listening to Marina, folks, it's very clear how important it is that all of us engage on behalf of Pastor Saeed. If you want to stand with us, if you want to join more than 355,000 people who are calling for Pastor Saeed's release, we need you to call now. It's 877-989-2255. Of course, you can go to SaveSaeed.org as well. But call now, 877-989-2255. And after the break, we're going to hear part two with Jordan's interview with Marina Namat.
At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to know that the American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
We are very grateful. I want to say this, a huge thank you to our friends and members from literally from coast to coast. Because of the generosity of our members, we've added new lawyers. We're handling international affairs as high as even the United Nations. A lot of issues going on, a lot of great things happening, and a huge thank you to our friends and members around the country.
With an exceptional track record of success, the American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. There's no better place to get the facts, the truth, about the issues that matter most to you and your family than at the ACLJ website. Learn more about our work and our defense of freedom online at aclj.org. The situation for American Pastor Saeed Abedini is getting worse. This U.S. citizen is being beaten, tortured, and subjected to psychological abuse as he serves 8 years in one of Iran's most brutal and deadly prisons. Pastor Saeed is facing a life-threatening prison sentence simply because of his Christian faith. He's no longer permitted to call his wife and two young children who live in the U.S. His family does not know when or even if they will ever hear his voice again. The ACLJ continues to work here at home and around the world to secure his freedom. We continue to pressure the U.S. government, the United Nations, and the European Union. But we need to hear from you. There's power in numbers, and that's why your voice is so important. Sign on to our petition now to save Pastor Saeed. Time is critical. Call now 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255. 888-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.
We're talking to Marina Namad, who's got two books out about this, and one is about the experience of Prisoner of Tehran, a memoir, and After Tehran, A Life Reclaimed. Both you can get at Amazon.com, folks. But Marina, how long did it end up, I mean, and do you know why you were released? Was there a reason why that this came to an end?
Yes, there are usually some very odd reasons for things, I guess. I was, as I said, a court I never attended gave me a death sentence. And back then, getting a death sentence, even now, it's not that unusual at all. And my death sentence was reduced to life in prison because one of the guards, one of my interrogators, what he told me was that he had believed me that I wasn't really connected to any political groups, but this didn't give anybody the reason to actually release me. And I was a Christian. I am a Christian. I am a Christian and I was raised in a Christian family in Iran.
Right.
So I wasn't a convert. And he threatened me. He told me that I had to become his wife because I had a life sentence. Nobody cared about me anyhow, and I was going to be in prison forever. So he said that I had to become his wife, or he would arrest my parents. And he forced me to convert to Islam, and he even changed my name. So one day I looked around, and I had lost my name, my religion, my dignity. I was 17, and I was basically being raped legally, very legally, in Evin prison in solitary confinement, day in, day out. And this man took me on short leaves of absence from the prison to visit his family, and I expected his family to be evil and his mom to be the evil stepmother from Cinderella. And they were actually nice, normal, average people. And they were kind to me. They were generous. They never yelled at me. They never beat me. They were never mean to me. And they actually explained to me that my torture husband had been a political prisoner in Evin during the time of the Shah before the revolution, and he had been tortured severely. And I realized that the man that I had 100% believed he was evil, and he and I had nothing in common, nothing whatsoever, suddenly I realized he had been a victim just like me. And it was disturbing to realize that victimhood is not a perpetual state, that if you're a victim today, you can become the torturer of tomorrow. And I didn't like that thought at all. This man was assassinated 15 months after our marriage by a rival faction of the government. And his family, good people, normal people, they fought for my release. They bribed. I don't know what they did. And they got a pardon for me, and I was released 2 years, 2 months, 12 days after I had been arrested.
Now, how long did you stay in Tehran? I mean, after this experience, before now you're in Canada,
yeah.
But was that a process of eventually leaving? Or I mean, how long, even getting out, what was it like, the whole experience? I mean, what you just explained is
a lot.
It's why people should read the book, because you just explained a lot right there. But but coming out and then having this sense of freedom may not be the right word coming out of a prison in Tehran, but at least not the situation you were in Evin prison. What was that like?
Well, I got home. I sat at the dinner table with my parents, and they talked about the weather. Everybody avoided asking me, what happened to you? Everybody knew that people are tortured. Now, right now, people know that the prisoners of Evin are tortured. People know, everybody knows, that the people in Evin prison are treated horribly, horribly. And yet, people don't really dare talk about it. I guess they talk about it more now than they did back then when I was released from the prison. Iran was in war with Iraq, and anybody who said a word against the government would be considered a spy of Saddam Hussein and Iraq. So my parents didn't talk about it. I mean, talking about it would have meant going back to prison if anybody heard you. And I was in a state of shock. I was young. I was extremely traumatized. I had lost many friends. My friends were buried in mass graves. And, you know, what I had seen and what I had experienced, it was just impossible to process it immediately. So I guess I was suffering from PTSD, but I wasn't really showing that any symptoms. And I just kept on going. I mean, I married my boyfriend. I went back to my church. I married my boyfriend in the Catholic Church. And then I wanted to leave Iran. But because I returned to the Catholic Church, basically now I was considered an apostate. And I knew they were going to come for me again, and I just couldn't tolerate that. So the government of Iran, it refused to give me a passport. They kept on refuse, and eventually after 5 years, I had to sign a whole bunch of documents to promise I would never do or say anything against the Iranian government, that I said I was going to visit my brother in Canada, that I would return to Iran within a year. So I signed everything, and I even paid a huge sum of money. They even gave me a receipt. Basically, it's kind of like a bail. And they gave me a passport and limited, like, one exit on it. And we left, and it took about a year to actually make it to Canada.
Folks, you got to get the book. I mean, The Prisoner of Tehran, A Memoir, and then After Tehran, A Life Reclaimed, Marina Namah. You can get these books at Amazon.com, through her website as well at marinanamat.com. To speak out, you've talked a lot about this, that speaking out is very important for people to do, for whether it's Saeed Abedini or the thousands who are in this situation who may not be a well-known name. It may not be because of religious reasons, but it could be like in your situation where you were raised Christian. So was it that you had gone through that? Though we know about people who have been in that, the second situation you talked about, where you're almost forced to convert, and then when you want to return to back to your original faith, you're now an apostate in these kind of situations. But speaking out, how important is it? Because, you know, we hear from this regime, oh, every time you speak out, you're causing trouble, and this is not going to do any good. But it seems like everybody who's been in this situation has had the opposite opinion.
It is hugely important to speak. I always say at conferences that silence is a weapon of mass destruction. Basically, when you're silent in face of injustice and horrible crimes against humanity, in this case, mass torture, mass arrests, mass executions, you know, you name it, when you remain silent, when you know about it and you remain silent, you're a bystander. And to be a bystander in a situation like that is unforgivable. One needs to stand up and to speak out against atrocities like these, or basically you're warranting them and you're allowing them to just continue happening. And you know, something else that I guess, you know, the media, like, you know, you are a part of the media, and I'm grateful for this opportunity you have given me. But, you know, big U.S. media, I mean, we see Iranian officials, Ahmadinejad and the others. I mean, there are so many Ahmadinejads in Iran. They are given the mic all over the world, not only in the United States, but in the West, in free countries, in the U.N., they are giving the microphone. And I'm fine with that. I believe that if I'm allowed to speak, then my enemies should be allowed to speak as well. But I believe that, for example, if, I don't know, on the CNN, we see Ahmadinejad go on and tell lies to the world for an hour, then I believe that a torture victim from Iran should be given the same opportunity, the same microphone on the same international stage. I mean, we need to be able to face our torturers, and we have never been given that opportunity in 33 years. I mean, if I speak at the UN and I bear witness to what happened to me, if the Iranian officials, they don't like it, they can leave the room. But guess what? When I was being tortured, I didn't have the option to leave the room.
Marina Namah, folks, another reason why it's so important to speak out when we have these media opportunities like we do through our radio broadcasts, or Fox News, who has been covering Pastor Saeed's situation, Saeed Abedini, who's in the same prison that Marina spent 2 years, 16 years old. You've got to read her book, Prisoner of Tehran, A Memoir, and the newest book as well, After Tehran, A Life Reclaimed. Marina, I know we're going to want to turn to you again. I wanted to let this time that you're on, the first time with us, to be able to tell your story. And thank you so much for spending time with us today to do just that.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate your time.
Folks, that interview makes it as clear as can be why all of us, we need to engage this fight. If you want to sign on, if you want to stand with Pastor Saeed for his freedom, call now, 877-989-2255. We'll see you tomorrow.
The ACLJ continues to work here at home and around the world to secure his freedom. We continue to pressure the U.S. government, the United Nations, and the European Union. But we need to hear from you. There's power in numbers, and that's why your voice is so important. Sign on to our petition now to save Pastor Saeed. Time is critical. Call now, 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or add your name online, aclj.org.